Yes, my name is Annette, and I'm from this department. And I have a question. It was very, very inspiring. But what happens when you're not analyzing sound, but recorded sound? Because once you've recorded sound, when I've been recording sound myself, I find myself more sensitive in a different way. You know, suddenly I can hear, my ears change when it's not actual sound, but recorded sound. Could you comment on what are the difficulties in your analytical approach? Is it, or are there any difficulties?
Well, I think that recorded sound cannot be used alone. Of course, the in-situ, I mean, we really at Cresson insist on the in-situ experience. That is, to be there and to start just listening to it without recording. But that's, of course, a very, very important first way to start with trying to work on the place. Of course, the contextual parts of this experience is much more present when you're there than when you just listen to the recording. Although, and that's maybe an hypothesis just to work on, what kind of element of context can we hear from the recorded sound? And what I'm trying to say is that maybe sound carries out a lot of different dimension, a contextual dimension of the place. We can still hear it, maybe not, for example, you will be able to say, well, you don't feel the cold, for example. Maybe not with sound. I don't know. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But at least a sound will carry a lot of different dimension you can try to work on. But I agree with you, it will never replace the in-situ experience. And also, what is maybe very different, and maybe we're going to talk about it tomorrow, the in-situ experience involves most of the time movement. When you're in the place, you walk, you move, you have the ability to explore whatever, and when you're just facing the recording, of course, I mean, you can walk, but you don't walk in the place. So that's, of course, very different dynamics. So I would say, of course, you don't replace the in-situ experience, but the recording is very interesting because it enables you to repeat the experience as many times as you want, and also to exchange, to listen to it with other people, and to exchange, and to come back, and to just check your ideas. So it's a way, in a way, it's a medium, it's a tool to work together.
Thank you. I'm Steen Kolper-Nielsen. I'm a recovering resident musicologist. Sorry. I know. I'd just like to follow on from that question, because a very specific question as to, I think in each of the three samples of urban ambience that you played, there was, to my ears, a sounding presence that really surprised me. This low-pitched, sort of steady rumbling. It's really pronounced, and I just wondered, is that the sound of far off traffic? Was that the sound of the wind in the microphone, or where am I to sort of constitute that sound?
Maybe it's possible with the first one, when we recorded it, was there was kind of a windy weather, so maybe that's something. But also, that's something we noticed most of the time when we record in urban environment, that there is like this kind of rumbling thing that we don't notice at all because we are so in it that we just get rid of it. But we always, that's why, that, in a way, that's why I'm trying to say when I was saying that an ambience is kind of a background of the everyday experience, that you're in it and most of the time you don't even notice that you are in it. And it is the same with sound. I mean, at Cresson we have a very famous, a famous effect we like to always to comment. It's called the cut effect, which is when, for example, when you're in a room and you have like a kind of a drawing from the ventilation or this kind of a very continuous and low pitch sound, you don't notice it at all. But if you just turn it off, then you realize that it was there before. So in a way, that's what it is with sound also. It's like maybe in certain sounds you're so in it that you don't notice it. And maybe the recordings can help us to work on this low intensity level of perceptions.
Thank you.
My name is Monica Sand. I'm working as an artist and also as a researcher at the University of College of Art, Design and Craft in Stockholm. And it's very interesting when you are talking about ambiences, because you can see two directions in this kind of research. On one hand, you really are able to grip the creation of meaning in a society, in a social cultural context. But on the other hand, you also really are in a risk of, and that's my question, how do you look on this risk of being a kind of used for commercial reasons? Because we can see at Konstfack, the short name of the other one, how the commercialized gallerias and everything in the city really want to grip the notion of how can you manipulate people by creating a certain ambience. And you can see that's emerging everywhere, and you get a lot of questions, how can we influence the emotions of people so they feel desire and wishes when they enter into this place? So how do you see those? Because it's really interesting when you talk about creation of meaning and the social, but you also have this other aspect of the ambiences.
Okay, that's a very usual and interesting and important question. I mean, each time we talk about ambience, that question raises, and I think that's right, that's pretty right. We'll have several answers. One is that it's not because now we are pointing out the existence or the idea of ambience that it was never there before. Of course, it was always there, and everybody, as inhabitants, city dwellers, or whatever, are part of an ambience, either now or a century ago or 2 centuries ago. The question now is that we know that in specific commercial industries, like supermarkets or whatever, the use of sound, but the use of also of smell or temperature, is done for commercial purposes. It is done already. So the idea to point out the existence of an ambience is also a way to say, not to get rid of this thing and say, well, we don't want to see it, just work the way we do usually, and then you'll be all right. No, that's not the way it works. It is already implemented in the industry. So to focus on this notion and this idea of ambience is a way to point out the fact that people are already working on it for commercial purpose, and that a critique of it can be possible, and it raises a kind of ethical question, until when and how far can we go in the planning of the experience of people, and what is the limits, what is the boundary, and what is the values underlying it. So of course, that's a very important question, very important issue we have to raise. But I think that pointing out the existence of this field is already a way to build critical tools in order to deconstruct what is going on already.
Yes, my name is Franz Mossberg. I'm from Sound Environment Center in Lund University. And I was thinking about, relating to the first question there, really, it strikes me that when you compare recordings that you've done only with audio, and with, if you have the same audio equipment and use a film camera, so you have the similar audio signal, but you get a totally different experience. I mean, the audio type of or experience of ambience, it strikes me, it's very much poetic. It's it's a bit like the process of reading, that we add something in our minds when we just hear the sound like this. That can make it a wonderful experience to listen, just like to a good recording of any traffic like the ones you had here. So I wonder how you like to comment on that, about how this, the notion of ambience, is it tied, although ambience is a concept covering a totality, of course, but it's very much focused right from the sound. So I don't know how you see that, the difference between the two modes, so to say.
Okay, I'm not sure I really understood, but I think I'm going to continue the answer of the first question.
Yeah, okay.
And yours, or yours, I guess. One thing we noticed, of course, we don't rely only on recordings, not at all. I mean, that's not the point I wanted to make. Of course, we rely a lot on investigation, observing people, and discussing with them, interviews, and all different kind of techniques. One of the things we noticed, when you interview people about their in-situ experience of a place, and you ask them, okay, what are your sensations? What do you feel? How do you feel in this place? It is a very hard question to answer, of course. It's very hard, and we are not used to it. The poets, maybe, or the writers. But what people do, some of the tactics they use is to use metaphors. They say, well, oh, here I am as if I was in a subway station, or it is as if I was in a cathedral. And so we ask why, and then they will comment on because the sound is so and so, or because the movement is that way, etc., etc. So in a way, the in-situ experience cannot be reduced to the actual physical presence of the body in the space, because it brings you also the social imaginary experience we all have, and the common references we all have of specific places. So we have, I would say, like a set of social metaphors that help us to configure the actual experience we have in a specific place. When I'm here, but also I'm somewhere else. And when we ask people, okay, what do you feel? Well, I feel the way I feel, but I feel the way I feel because I also have the experience of other places where the feeling was almost the same, almost the same. So in a way, it's a way maybe to bring back, you know, the memory, the involuntary memory of what Proust was talking about, like, you hear something, it brings you back somewhere in the past. Well, metaphors play this role, and I think the kind of research we're trying to do at Cresson is getting more and more related to the art world. And we see more and more overlap between like kind of social science research with investigation, methodologies, or things we know how to do, and also the way artists work on the same kind of question we have. So I think one of the very basic, very difficult question, I think that's very, very important, is the question of the expression. What I mean is not only to be able to give a semantic content of what I want say or what I want comment on a place, but also to create the right form of expression in order to be able to communicate what I want to communicate. So what kind of expression, what kind of form of expression do I use? And I think that artists and can be very helpful for us in order to raise this question and to bring this creative and imaginary dimension into the process of understanding the place. I don't know if I answer.
That's very interesting.
Sorry, the queue is very long.
I'm Jakob Kreutzer from the Department of Arts and Cultural Studies at the University of Copenhagen. I just want to thank you for a very inspiring talk, and also for bringing in the concept of the ambience or the atmosphere, which I can't help seeing as a very important or necessary expansion of, for example, the concept of soundscape being the sonic environment, and then the ambience bringing in the whole field of sensorial possibilities, but also the social and But what I would like to ask you is, it seems when you talk about it that there is always an ambience in every situation. There will be some kind of ambience that we could possibly investigate. But on the other hand, you talk about ambience music having special qualities appearing for us as an ambience. And to my ordinary language feeling, I would say that you can have more or less heavy ambiences. How do you think about that?
Okay, that's a question, a debate we have at Cresson. A few years ago, we organized this kind of seminar, internal seminar, about the idea of ambiance at Cresson by a researcher and students. And people did not really agree on this, precisely on this question, which is very also important one. Henri Mouchis, who is here too, will also say something about it. I think there is basically maybe two different positions, and the question is not to oppose them, but two ways of seeing ambiences. One, which is the one I defended here, is to say, okay, I'm interested by everyday ordinary experience. From that, I can observe that wherever I am, I'm always into a sensory environment, which has a specific quality, a specific mood, a specific quality. And so whether I notice it or not, I am in it. Okay. Other position, say, okay, there is some ambiences that we can very more easily identify, observe, and describe. You go to a cathedral, a church. You go to a nightclub. You go to an amusement park or whatever. You have specific places that are consciously designed to create a very specific ambiences, of course. So the question is, how do these two levels of analysis interact, intertwine? In a way, so where to go back to the question Deleuze was asking in between the relationship between the remarkable and the ordinary, how does these two things? And I think maybe one way to answer would be to work on the in-between, the two of them. How and under which conditions do I realize that I am an ambience, or I have the conscience of being into an ambience, or I know that if I want to a certain place, I go there because there is a certain ambience. So I would say maybe the question, I agree with you, that's a tricky question. I don't think we have an answer about that. And my only answer would be, working in the interface between what is underlying and what is appearing, the emergence of it. So what makes the difference? What makes the...
I'm Ricardo Hesman. I'm a sound artist from the Netherlands. And thank you for your inspiring reading. And I'd like to give you some comments, because you talk about artists that are creating new kinds of experience, and I'm already for several years busy with an ongoing artistic research to the what I call the multisensorial hearing perspective, and for that I'm creating multisensorial hearing interfaces, and that are based on the aspect of they are that are I call them woolen sound blanket objects, because often I do cover them with reused woolen blanket, and that has for me that has connotation.